Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 238 for September 16th, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Today, we will be discussing the 312th weekly report. And if you have not had a chance to take a look at that yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can view either the web or PDF version there. This episode is going to be audio only. So if you're joining us live, we're just going to be discussing the markets, and then also the recording will be posted to YouTube and to all the podcast directories as usual. So Mark, for the lineup today, Mark Sachs was supposed to join us, but he had something come up, and so we'll have him back soon. But I arranged for Jake Bernstein, Norman Hallett, and Jim Kenny to be here today, and Jim will be moderating. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Great. Okay, this should be a great show because there's a lot going on here Monday morning, and all three of us have been around the block a couple of times, so we've seen volatility before. So we'll try to give everybody the best insight we can onto what we're seeing and what probabilities we are seeing looking forward. Starting out, let's at least introduce ourselves and a little background of the firm that we represent. And let's start out with Jake Bernstein of trade-futures.com. Jake, welcome back, and a little background on yourself and again, trade-futures.com.
Thank you very much. I've been trading for 52 years and I'm beginning to sound like it. I trade anything that moves. I do not enjoy day trading anymore. I used to do that a lot. Written 45 books. I'm a real trader. I teach what I trade and I trade what I teach. I'm totally objective, not interested in fundamentals whatsoever. Everything is rule-based. That's all I can say right now.
Great. Okay, well, we'll get into a lot of information. I'm hoping everyone can benefit from your insight, Jake. Next up, of course, is Norm Hallett. And Norm is of the DisciplineTrader.com. And Norm, a quick background and again, a little bit more about Discipline Trader.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I haven't been here quite as long, although I'm in my fourth, I guess it's been four decades now, hanging around the markets, first exclusively in the option market, and then over the last 15 years, really, I've concentrated on helping traders with their mental and emotional issues. And as you do that, you realize that as you help people with their mental and emotional issues to stick to their trading plan and their rules, sometimes their trading plan and their rules suck. So what I have learned to do in the last third of that, with 15 years, is to also help people build trading plans and so on. So the Discipline Trader is all about mental and emotional issues. Simple Trading Plans is about trading plans. But I'm honored here to be with Jim, and especially Jake, here today. So thanks for having me.
Great. Okay, well, I'm Jim Kenny of the Option Professor. And again, today we're going to be focusing on Jake and Norm's ideas here. Starting out, the questions of the week are always, what do you think the S&P 500 may do between now, the opening today, and the end of the week? We opened today on the S&P. It looks like, the low today, let's put it that way, was 29.90 on the SPX. So, Jake, let's start it with you. How do you feel about the S&P between now and the end of the week, which is obviously a fairly short time frame?
This time of the year is reasonably unpredictable with the bias to the downside. In light of what's happening today, we ask the question, if someone had told you 5 years ago that approximately 5 to 10% of the world's oil production would be eliminated in one strike, you'd probably say stock market would be down 200-300 points in the S&P or 600-900 points in the Dow. That's not happening. Of course, the reason behind that is there's so many of the S&P stocks are energy stocks. So I would say the market is holding up amazingly well, even though the bias is to the downside. The period of greatest vulnerability to the downside is between now and late October. So I'm going to say it's a 50-50 proposition. The market is news-based. It's a short-term trader's market, a lot of opportunities, but I'd say I cannot predict with reasonable degree of comfort or accuracy what will happen by this Friday. So I'm going to avoid a strong prediction.
Right. And of course, we also have the Fed decision on Wednesday. So not only do we have all the geopolitical stuff going on, but we also have the Fed and a couple of other banks, BOE and BOJ are going to make decisions. So this is kind of a big week for the decisions.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
We have to wait for the other shoe to drop. Mm-hmm. In other words, the bombs have already dropped. Now it's a question of how Saudis and America and the rest of the world are going to react. And right. That's still waiting to happen.
Right. They're still in the decision mode. Norm, what's your input here as far as where we are this morning and where we're going to be Friday?
Well, I'm kind of with Jake on the market. In fact, I was going to ask Jake about this. You know, generally, of course, I'm a technician also, but, you know, I have my fundamental thoughts, especially in situations like we have right now where something this dramatic has happened, and especially the lack of really the market reaction to that. I think part of it from a fundamental standpoint could be the fact that we're producing our own oil, and we're net exporters instead of net importers, as we've always been, except for recent years. And it's interesting that right before the 6 o'clock open last night, I think about 5 o'clock in the evening, came out with releasing the stockpiles, so to kind of ease the pain. So I think, you know, from a technical standpoint, from what I see, and I'll give you a little bit more detail later, the way I see the technicals lining up, I think this is going to be a sideways week. I don't think we're going to go much up or down. I think sideways is where we're going to be this week. And a lot of what Jake said, as the market decides what to do with this fantastic piece of news that the market seems to be overwhelmed with right now, and nobody seems to be taking much of a position except for on the oilers themselves. So I'm going sideways on this, and I know that that's a boring answer, but there are a couple of reasons for it.
Well, it certainly is outside the realm of up or down by the end of the week. You guys have both created the third category, which really wasn't on the category list. But yeah, anyway,
I'm in California, and they say that in California, people go both ways.
That's so right. There you go.
What the heck?
Now, I mean, that question's always the best guess type thing. And trying to do a best guess when they've just attacked the Saudi oil fields and the Fed's decisions coming in with the BOJ and the BOE, it's not the best week to play flip a coin. With regards to, now, of course, I'm supposed to ask you what your strength of percentage probability is, and since we've said either sideways or unsure, probably that would be a pretty high percentage, but I'll ask it anyway. You know, what's your confidence level, Jake, that you know, I think you're thinking that it might drop a little further depending upon how the news comes out.
Yeah, I would say this. It's a trader's market.
Right.
The fact that we have a break in the market to the downside early in the week, and the old adage, don't sell stocks on Monday, suggests to me that a lower market on Monday will give us a higher market on Friday. Remember that this happened over the weekend. So traders are going to be pretty skittish going into the weekend. And again, if there's any kind of resolution between now and the end of the week, by which I mean the other shoe drops, we attack or whatever, market drops again, that'd be a buying opportunity, and I'd say higher close Friday. But if there's no resolution going into the weekend, I'd say lower close on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, we have some important numbers, and then we have numbers that aren't as important. The high has been 30.27 on the SPX, and the breakout point was around 29.40, where there was resistance. And the market's kind of meandering between these two points, and probably is difficult to make any real decision until one of those points is taken out. But
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
If the bears were looking for an opportunity to sell, or from some fundamental news to prompt that kind of selling or justification to sell, they've certainly gotten that.
Right.
We've been unable to prove their case. I would not be surprised if the market actually closes higher today and on Friday. So again, the bias remains intermediate and long-term to the upside, and we don't want to buck that trend.
Right. Norm, do you watch the VIX at all? Because it seems to be under that 15 number, which I think is fairly constructive. Well, when we're under 15 and between 10 and 15, my feeling is the market's in a reasonably constructive state. And even despite this big drop today, I'm looking at it around 14.86 or something. Do you look at that at all?
Yeah, I look at the VIX. I mean, you can't help it, but I mean, it points to a more orderly market when you're, you know, not 20 and over. But I, you know, there's a disappointment here. Again, I would expect some of these markets around the crude market to be a little bit more violent with this news, and we're not. So, you know, it's always there's the other adage where, you know, you sell the fact, and it's just that something like this attacking the oil capabilities of the largest producer, you know, that could lead to other things, you know, other bad things. And, you know, so I do think you have to keep your powder dry. And It's hard to be in this market at the end of the day, I think. So yeah, it's a trader's market. I think there's more probability maybe to the downside from the standpoint that that there is disappointment here in seeing it seeing some of these other markets. I, again, sideways is my thinking here because we're in a band, and I'll explain a little bit more about that later.
Yeah. Let me present one more thought. It's a market of stocks, not a stock market.
Mm-hmm.
By which right. I mean simply this. If you're looking simply at the S&P, you're looking at a conglomeration of a lot of different industry groups, a lot of different push-pull. So the opportunities, I think, would be mostly in individual stocks, mm-hmm. which have to be chosen on the basis of their own merit.
Mm-hmm.
So the S&P is not what I call a pure market. The probability of any trading strategy working is much higher in a pure market, by which I mean a market that's affected only by certain specific fundamentals, and they are more likely to perform well than would an index.
Right. Well, we've seen a little bit of turning points here this week, and getting back to the survey before we go off the rails here. What do you guys focus on mostly with your trading, as far as what technical situation do you focus on? As far as your research and all that kind of stuff, Jake.
I look at basically three things. Number one, normal versus abnormal behavior. In other words, is what's happening now typical of what happens at this time of the year, this day of the year, this week of the year? Number two, divergence. Do we have abnormal behavior or normal behavior? Number three, seasonality. Those are the three most important factors for me.
And Norm, factors and things that you're looking at to kind of create that disciplined environment?
Yeah, I'm mostly a futures trader. And I look at the S&P, I look at the crude, I look at the gold, and I look at the bonds. And I've been looking a little bit recently at the Japanese yen, but just because it seems to be a commodity recently that's been opposing the movements of the stock market. But you have to be careful. I've learned a lesson a long time ago that if you're trading a particular market, don't look to another market to give you direction on that market. Look at the technicals of that specific market for that market. For instance, if I look at the bonds for movement in the S&P, it may be able to help me in a general way, but specifically during day trading, sometimes you can get you can be doing the wrong thing by allowing another market to affect your analysis of the technicals of the main market that you're looking at. So, all of those markets have acted nicely to the specific trading plan that I've been running. And so those are the markets that I've been happily really focusing on.
Right. I've noticed that the Russell today actually made a new high by a bit on the rally that started at around 1460. And, there's been a rotation into transports, which were lagging, and also into the Russell in the last couple of weeks here. And I think it's kind of interesting to see the Russell with a green number here while everything else is a little bit on the red side. So they're certainly not just running for the hills. You've made a great point, Norm, that obviously the energy business has changed dramatically. And one thing that I was wondering when I saw the news was, is Aramco involved in this at all with regards to, they're coming to the market with this huge offering, and the interest in oil when we were down at 55 a barrel was very, very low. And I wonder out loud if there's any correlation between the Aramco deal coming and maybe a lack of interest in it because energy has really gone into the fade mode. And I'm wondering if it's coincidental or do you guys have any feeling on the correlation between the Aramco deal coming and all of a sudden we've got these things going on in the fields?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. We're not babes in the woods. We know, for example, that before 9/11, there was a lot of speculation, options buying, big trading in energy stocks and insurance stocks. That was a known fact. A lot of people made a lot of money on that, trading on the information before it became public. I would venture to say that given the lawless, ruthless behavior of the Iranians and others in the Middle East, they knew the attack was going to happen, probably bought through Swiss banks, futures and options, and unloaded when the market opened after the event. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was a connection. In these markets and with the kind of dissemination of information and lawless behavior we have, nothing would surprise me.
Yeah, they're looking to have a $2 trillion offering. If oil goes from 55 down to 35, they're not going to get $1 trillion on that offering.
Right.
So anyway,
there's a lot of big money out there, and there are certain markets that have a history of being controlled or being manipulated. One of those recently has been silver. I don't know. I'm sure Jake has noticed that. I haven't read a lot about manipulation, but this movement in silver has been extraordinary from its the 14 area to almost to $20 recently, and now it's hanging around 18. But that movement just smelled of manipulation, where you have interests accumulating contracts in big bulks, and I have read a couple of articles where this was pointed out. But it would not surprise me, of course, to see it happen in crude market, which I also think is a controllable market. I wouldn't doubt certain involvement for sure.
Norm, I would say that was Norm, right?
Yeah.
I would say that these days every market is controlled to one extent or another. We have to say that's true. To the extent to which markets are controlled depends on the size of who's controlling it and whether they get caught or not. There's so many different ways to control markets these days and to manipulate markets. Our job as traders is to find those clues that tip us off before a market moves that it's under accumulation or control. So we have to accept the fact that they are controlled and manipulated. We just have to find out before the fact.
Yeah, I feel for the new trader, because what you've just talked to, what you've just said, is a matter of experience, seeing that, seeing it happening, knowing that it's out of the ordinary, and then realizing that something is going on behind the scenes, as opposed to, woo, that was just a big move today,
Yeah.
On the commodity front, because you guys do follow that quite a bit, we've had a turning point in crude. We had a turning point in soy. We had a turning point now in the gold and silver. And of course, we had a turning point in TLT, which is the proxy for the 20-year bond. Last week's lows in crude, soy, gold, and silver. Do you think those are lows that you could defend on, and that the market will have another appreciable rally? Or do you think that the lows made last week are going to be in jeopardy as we look forward? And I'll start with Jake.
All of those markets that you mentioned have had huge commercial buying activity, which is detectable by looking at the commitment of traders report. And so I think the buying is real. But remember, the time perspective of commercials is much different than the small trader. They can buy and hold for years and years if they want to and continue to add on the way down. So I think these moves are real and they just started. And one market that we have probably never mentioned on the air here is this one, orange juice. I absolutely hate that market. It's a horrible market. But if you take a look at a chart, commitment of traders report, commercial buying activity in orange juice, it is the biggest, longest buying they've ever done in the entire history of the market. They're not doing it because OJ is good for your health. They're doing it because they know something. And what they know is something that most people don't know. They've got the best weather forecasters in the business. Yeah. So they're anticipating a big move later this year. So let's add that market to the list, even though I hate that damn market.
I hate it too. It's as thin as hell. But yeah, in fact, I guess 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I put out a report on, on Facebook about keeping your eye on the orange juice market. It tends to have a couple of false breakouts to get you thinking this is not a tradable market, and then it takes off. It had one of those breakouts intraday a week or two ago, and or maybe last beginning of last week, but or the end of the week before. But it's it's been kind of settling in that 102, 101, 102, 104 area. And when that storm was coming, that was the reason to have people think that they were buying. But little did they know, there's not a lot of orange juice as much as there was made in Florida anymore after the light
that's true.
A decade ago. So it's all Brazilian and it's all other parts of the world. Orange juice can be treacherous. So anybody that's trading that, I think Jake would agree, tread lightly there and give yourself some room, which
you're going to get a bad feel no matter what.
Yeah, that's right.
Adding to that situation, by the way, not to interrupt, you have huge accumulation now in coffee futures as well. And the one thing we know about coffee futures is when it starts to move, it's huge. So people might want to take a look at those charts. They're talking to me and they're saying, buy me, buy me, buy me. There's a coffee ETF. And I think there's a couple of coffee ETFs that are worth looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the orange juice market has been great. The gold market has been, you mentioned, I'm back to your original question, Jim, about the metals and some of these markets that have turned. But I'm seeing, gold, I think you've got to look north rather than south when you give it a long-term perspective. I always think of the Chinese, the way they're negotiating with us, they take a broad, long view, and this administration is taking a day-to-day view, and you know they're going to win in that kind of a situation because they can ride out the rough spots. But I do think that gold is not showing me the strength that I would like to see it show me, and it may have some further correction before the next leg up. But I really like the silver market, and you know gold generally. Silver won't go without gold going. So
let me add one more thing to that.
Yeah.
The most underrated market in the metals, besides copper, is platinum. Yeah. Remember that platinum used to sell at a premium to gold, several hundred dollars or more. It's now trading at a discount to gold, several hundred dollars or more. So if you're looking for a market to put away and sock it away, either in coins, bullion, ingots, ETFs, etc., platinum is the one to look at.
I agree. I remember when gold hit, it was 1980, gold hit the 850 the first time around when it took I think platinum hit 1150 at the time. So right. Yeah, I mean, it was to see it at this level and to see palladium, which used to be discount to platinum, now at a premium at $1,450, whatever the heck it is, way up there. But yeah, the good thing about platinum also, if I can note, is the fact that the contract is 50 ounces and not 100.
Right.
So there's, it's a little bit easier to manage from a scale in and scale out standpoint if that's what your trading plan does. So I really like platinum on that level. But you know, the other thing about platinum, it's also it can also get kind of tricky with the fills. So you gotta use the limit orders, and you gotta, it's a relatively thin market still.
Right.
But I do like that market too. I agree with you.
Let me throw something down here that's actually turned here in the last week or so, and actually looks like it's accelerating, and that's in the sugar market, coming off of some fairly low prices over a 5-year basis. It's definitely in the lower echelon of prices, and it certainly has a bid on it today as people are talking the ethanol story again. And so do you guys see a sustainable move on sugar out of this 10-11 area, or is this going to be a pop and fade type deal? And Jake, you can start on that one.
Sugar up very nicely today. We've been recommending buying sugar for the big move, and we also have good commercial buying activity there. So yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Sugar's a good one. In fact, the big picture is that most commodities are turning, mm-hmm. which in the big picture means inflation, mm-hmm. but again, that's down the road.
Mm-hmm. Norm, do you see anything on the sugar there? Or
listen, I mean, all of a sudden, it's very obvious what we're doing here. We're talking about the softs.
Yeah.
Orange juice, coffee, sugar. The only thing we haven't mentioned is cotton. That used to be a soft. I guess it still is. I think they tend to all give us action at the same time. And I think, again, in a very broad sense, when you're talking about weather markets, there are going to be some things we've never experienced before with the global warming situation. You know, wherever they grow these things, they're going to be growing further north to get to the same temperatures. So I think there's going to be a lot of change and disruption in those areas. So I think if I were somebody starting out and looking to kind of get next to a particular market, I've been in so long, it seems gold and silver are my go-to markets when it seems I have a certain depth of knowledge and experience with those. I think people, you know, the weather-oriented markets, you know, could be a really, really great place to trade for, you know, the next decade. So
can I interject one thing?
Sure.
You talked before about the tools that we use. One of my favorite tools is the Commitment of Traders report. Mm. I will point out something very important. A few months before this silver move began, in fact, right at the bottom of the silver move, for the first time in the entire history of silver, commercials in the silver market were net long. It's the first time it ever happened. Mm. And it happened right at the bottom of this move. So again, talk about insiders. Commercials are the ultimate insiders because they know exactly what's going on with their business. And for commercials to be buying silver, when in fact, for the entire history of the market, going back to the beginning of the COT, they've never done that before. Net, that's very significant development. And at that same time, it happened in gold and platinum.
You know, people have made a study, of course, of Commitment to Traders. Have you written a book on that, Jake, of all the books? And if not, can you recommend to people how they can learn about Commitment to Traders? Because it is that important.
If they want to contact me, I'll send them a free webinar I've done on the Commitment to Traders report.
Mm-hmm. You know, the move up in coffee you were talking about, it also correlates to a drop in the price of Starbucks stock from the 100 level down to 89. I don't know if there's a correlation there, but if there was a sustained move up in coffee, you would imagine that could hurt their margins, and that could be another indicator that the coffee does have some legs right now.
Right, here's the way Starbucks plays that game. They've been buying coffee all the way down. They're the primary commercial. So here they've accumulated a huge amount of coffee. They're not going to lower the price for you at the retail level. Mm-mm. When prices start to go up, they're going to say, sorry, the 50-cent cup of coffee that we've been charging $6.50 for, we now have to charge $8.50 because prices have gone up. Mm-hmm. Meantime, they're sitting pretty. So ultimately, I think it's going to reflect very positively in their earnings, which is what's been happening. And that explains the fundamentals of why Starbucks has moved up so much. And remember, they've also bought their sugar. They've bought their cocoa. They've been buying milk. The milk futures market, which is very thinly traded, has been very low. So every ingredient in terms of the raw ingredients that go into what Starbucks does has been dirt cheap. So ultimately, that's going to reflect on their earnings as long as the economy doesn't crash.
Well, which takes me back to the other thing you talked about the rise in commodity prices, but especially in sugar, to see inflation start to rear its ugly head at some point down the road. But yeah, I got to watch those things.
Yeah. With these metals, again, my feeling was that the 1520 to 1580 area was going to be resistance because it was kind of former lows from 2012 where it broke down from. So far, that's been accurate. Now, we've had a pullback to just under 1500. There are people out there who might want to think about, if they don't own it, maybe start buying it. And if they own it, places to add. Is there levels on the gold and the silver prices, Norm, that you see that would be of interest to you?
Yeah. Bring the chart up here so I can get a better picture. Yeah, I was doing work on this this weekend. Yeah, I mean, there is a divergence in the daily chart. I think Jake mentioned divergence. One thing that he was, I'm sure he's seen it. The daily chart where the RSI, I'm talking about an RSI divergence, where the where we're seeing a reduction in the overbought nature of this recent move and a reduction in the momentum as the RSI is pointing over a slight lower slope and as the prices moved higher over the last month. So, that's a negative thing. Of course, we've broken now based on that, but it did follow through. And now we're sitting at right at that 1500 level trying to maintain it. If we do break that, I think we will check the 1450 level. There is a lot of accumulation between 1400 and 1450. About a month of accumulation, the entire month of July was spent in that range for the most part. And so we may test that range if we break 1500. Also recently, this recent move back down to 1500 broke a higher lows and higher high sequence of this run up, which also gives me a little bit of a pause here, believing that that this break is maybe more probable than I thought it was the first time I looked at these numbers. So I would be a little bit cautious here if I were looking to buy here. I think there may be better prices, but you're going to have to let the technicals guide you.
Yeah, certainly if you blow out 1580, then the train's definitely leaving the station, so you can forget about those sub 1400 numbers or sub 1500 numbers if we take out the top end, probably.
Yeah, I mean, we resume higher highs, but the system has been broken, so we'd have to develop something new here.
Mm-hmm. On my work, palladium, silver, and gold have all reached their targets that we predicted 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think at this point, you've got to wait for a nice big pullback, mm-hmm. which it will be a capitulation by small traders. Remember, you can't turn on the TV these days and watch for more than 15 minutes without seeing an ad for Roslyn Capital, mm-hmm. or whatever, Monex. Mm-hmm. Silver and gold are trending higher. It's going to be, mm-hmm. put it in your IRA. That's the kiss of death. Mm-hmm. So once these people have been out of the market, been scared the hell out of the market or whatever, that'll be time to get back in. We've taken a lot of our positions off at resistance, mm-hmm. and targets, and we're trailing stops on the rest. But I think, again, rolling right now into platinum would be a good idea on the next break.
That's where the value is. Yeah, again, I was always thinking that the silver and the gold and the silver, the palladium and platinum, I just wondered if they were lagging because of technology has changed and the usage of them has been diminished. I was just wondering if that is a factor.
If I can jump in, because I think really Jake is the guy to answer this, because I've been, of course, in the precious metals I mentioned for years also, but palladium was it catalytic converters? I think that palladium was the big thing. And with when the car industry was so strong, that's when platinum seemed to be premium to gold. All that has softened. I mean, it's almost an industrial. It's really the perfect combination of precious and industrial metal, platinum. So how do you differentiate that? I know you look at the numbers and you're not a fundamentalist, but where is platinum in the world of industrial / precious metal, Jake?
Let's put it this way: it's becoming more widely used in jewelry these days than ever before. So that's another application. Mm-hmm. But I think people are looking at the ratio. They're saying we want more value for our money. And remember that a lot of the platinum market is controlled by Russia and South Africa. So there's some geopolitical concerns there as well, as there is in the palladium, since about 90% of the world's palladium comes from Russia. So there's a lot of factors there. I like to treat the market on its own merits. And right now, the technical aspect of platinum is much better than it is for gold or silver.
Why has it been such a laggard? I mean, even to palladium. Palladium was twice the price for a while. Why has, in the last recent years, until the very recent, why has platinum been such a drag?
I'll give you a stupid answer. The charts have looked bad. It's been basically sideways, hasn't broken out to the upside or downside, hasn't continued any moves when it has broken out. So it's been a dog, no doubt about it, but every dog has its day. And right. The question really is now, on the next pullback, which is coming very, very soon, will we find support? And if that's the case, then platinum will definitely be the place to be. And remember, most of these firms that are advertising put gold and silver in your IRA are looking at gold and silver. They're not looking at platinum. Mm-hmm. So when the prices in gold and silver get out of reach for most people, they're going to say, well, we've got another good one for you. Now it's time to do platinum. And we want to be there before that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Norm, you've been doing the gold and silver for a long time, you know, years and years ago, decades ago, 30-40 used to be the silver gold ratio, 30-40 buy sell. Then I think it went up to something like 40-50. And then now it's in the 90s. I mean, is there any relevance to the gold and silver ratio anymore? And what do you think caused that tremendous spread out going up to 90 from where it used to be?
Well, I think there is a relevance for the two. And I think Jake just, you know, they're all precious metals. Maybe it's more of a, you know, mental relevance than it is. But I think some of the uses of platinum, again, silver lagged because, especially during the time when we crashed about 10 years ago, you know, it's industrial metal side. It's used for computers, so on and so forth, I think is what caught. And then, of course, people moving to gold when that process was happening, you know, that started the big spread. But it's been a while since we've had 40 and 50 to 1.
But I mean, you know, this 90 to 1, I mean, 95 to 1, we're down around 83 today. A lot of, you know, I have some people in the metal business that they've been buying silver, selling the gold, and it's been working very well for them. Do you think there's a future to the buy the silver, sell the gold type of strategy?
Or I think there is if you look at a spread chart. I mean, again, you got to look at the chart. It's just like any other chart. And, you know, if you look at the gold silver spread chart, it'll be pretty obvious.
And it looks like it maybe has made a long-term turn.
Jake, what do you think?
I think it has.
Yeah, I think so too.
So that's another interesting way to kind of play it and also have some type of a hedge going on. So you're not just naked on one side of one or the other, you know?
Yeah, but again, I think you do have to have your eye on platinum. I do think that's really the one that has a lot of the potential. There are ratios there too, which escape me. But again, they've been out of line for a long time. But I don't trade spreads mostly, unless it's, you know, wheat and corn and some of the grains that have some nice consistent spreads. But the gold, you know, gold silver spreads should continue to work. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to miss out on hearing about Jake and the seasonals, because I think everyone would be, you know, get some real value out of that because of your, you know, long, long history being aware of how they work. So, you know, I'd like to go around the horn as far as different market groups and get a little bit of a feeling, Jake, on what you see in the seasonal front. And then I'm going to flip it over to Norm to see what he sees on the technical front. And let's start out with the grains. You know, we had the soybean move take you right up towards 9, and then now it's stalled out again. So what is the seasonality on the grains as we go in into the end of the year?
By September, October, most of the grains have made their lows. So that's happening right now. In terms of the metals?
Well, let's go over one at a time with Norm, too. So we get, you know, we're going to get your view on the seasonals. And then, of course, if you have an opinion on one particular one, obviously you have corn, wheat, soybeans, and others. Is there any particular grain that sticks out as value here?
Well, I'm mostly, you know, I do like the soybean market. I think we've seen this bottom that we've seen is recent. There may be a pullback back to the 880 area. I'm looking here now at the November soybeans. But I do think that we've seen the bottom for the time being. And that, but, you know, until the trade war is has some concrete evidence of being behind us, I think you're going to continue to see, a choppy market. So I think somewhere in the 950, the highs earlier this year in January should be about the, I don't think we're going to get much past that at the 960, 970 area.
Point of information.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of times we find value where we're not looking. So people are looking at beans, they're looking at corn, they're looking at wheat.
Right.
But of all the grain and soy complex markets, there's been a very predictable cycle in soybean oil.
Oh, bean oil.
And that is the market that we're especially interested in. Right. The margin is low. It won't kill you dead if you're wrong. And if you're right, make some big bucks. The cyclical behavior of soybean oil is extremely predictable, and that low has been seen. So look at the bean oil. Don't forget about it.
I'm looking at it right now, Jake, and I'm seeing, you know, very nice, ever since May, really a kind of a steady move higher, kind of drifting higher, but with some pretty dynamic moves. Today's move in the oil took out the recent highs again. What say you about the next few weeks in bean oil?
Still bullish. Yeah. Extremely bullish. If we have the capacity to show charts here, I would show the cycle that goes all the way back to the 1940s, which bottom is, I think it's a 17-year cycle, a very big cycle, and huge commercial buying activity as well. So everything's hanging together in the soybean oil for a big move up, and that move is in process right now.
Now, bean oil, for the most part, as from my memory of trading, haven't traded in several months, but generally moves in opposition to the meal and the soybeans seem to move together, and the oil seems to oppose that. Why is that? And do you expect that to be the case?
Well,
if you have a big demand market for soybean meal for animal feed, you've got to crush a lot of beans.
Mm-hmm.
When you crush the beans, you get oil and you get meal. If the demand for oil is not as strong as it is for meal, you get an excess of soybean oil, which causes bean oil prices to go down while meal is going up. So it's a very historical relationship called the soybean crush. Which I don't trade because I hate the fundamentals. Just I don't understand them. Mm. But the bottom line is, if you do get that big demand for soybean meal, it's going to push bean oil prices lower. Mm. So here's the bottom line is this. If it's true that we've got a vegan change of ethos, a big change in the universe, people moving to plant-based foods,
right,
you're not going to get as much soybean meal consumption for animal feed, which means the demand for meal is going to go down. If the demand for meal goes down, you're not going to crush as much beans, which means you're going to have a big bull market in bean oil because there won't be as much bean oil. That's my extent of knowledge of fundamentals.
Yeah, I mean, that's a way of taking the technicals and turning it into a nice bedroom story because,
exactly,
you know, it's understandable exactly, and you can follow the bouncing ball on the song you're singing.
Exactly.
And so that's good for, because most people would like to have a story behind the technicals, you know.
Well, my extent of knowledge is the Beyond Burger. Have you tried that yet?
The Beyond Burger, I've had it, yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific. It's going to change the world.
That's the flow of the traffic, so you don't want to fight the traffic, you know. Let's switch over to the oil market. Obviously a big day today, but really, you know, you're still underneath 65 and just above 60, and this is on the biggest news. And so is oil as seasonally going to be a reasonable place to be?
Oil usually bottoms in August. It's made its move. I don't think this move is going to last. The big cycles in oil don't bottom until the first quarter of next year. I think this ultimately will prove to be a great selling opportunity for people who are in the producing business to sell oil, but not yet. And they have to wait for the next shoe to drop, which I think is coming in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Right. How do you see the price of oil, Norm, on your technical charts? Do you see some resistance?
I think you just described it. Yeah, I just, we've spent so much time between 50 and 60. Now we've broken above that. You know, if there is another bombing or another crazy thing, we could hit 70. I mean, from the technical standpoint, you know, that's certainly allowable. But I do think that if there's going to be a second phase, that would be the time to look to short it. Because remember, the crude market is like pretty much any other market. It goes down faster than it goes up.
You know, this is an eerie similarity to the Saddam Hussein burning oil fields story. So the biggest move came at the top when the oil fields were on fire and the predictions were dire. It's a very similar instant replay to me.
Yeah,
I was looking at some of the stocks like Royal Dutch, and I thought 54 and 55 was a great place to take a shot at it. And I thought it could go to 62. It's already around 58, 59. So one more bump up in oil, one more bump up in Royal Dutch, and I think that could be a time to take some chips off the table.
I think it all depends on Donald Trump's cojones. We'll see how big they are.
Yeah, I don't think they're very big. Okay, let's turn to, that's why Bolton's not there. I got a new nick. I call him Bomb and Bolton. That's his name. Anyway, let's talk about the U.S. dollar. It's been stuck in this 95-99 range. Everyone's got all these predictions, but in the end, it doesn't go anywhere. What do you see seasonally on the dollar?
I see lower.
So you think that 99 area might hold up and people could maybe trade against that number?
I do. And we've seen some buying opportunities and triggers in the Swissie on the long side, euro currency on the long side, and in particular, don't laugh, the pound sterling against the U.S. dollar has given a buy trigger.
Hey, the reasoning behind it is our deficits are going through the roof and the leverage of our nation is huge compared to other nations as far as the national debt versus the GDP. Yes. So when people start looking at those numbers and then they start looking at the value, it could change. And that Lagarde is supposed to come in and do a stimulus package with Germany. If that happens, you know, that's going to change the whole background in Europe.
For sure.
And that obviously could be the dynamite that blows up the dollar a little bit. But what are you seeing, Norm? Do you see any topping up there or too early to tell?
I mean, if you look at a chart without any of the other indicators, we seem to be marching higher with higher lows and higher highs. I mean, there's a couple of little blips here and there, but we're above the 200, we're above the 50, and you know most other averages that have two digits to them. But if you look a little bit further, again, that RSI, which I've learned to consult before I do anything major, ever since August, that last high that was made at the beginning of this month, although we made a new high there pretty dramatically, we've been down in the RSI since then. So I'm seeing a divergence there, which is making me a bit soft here on believing that we can continue much longer. I mean, this has been quite a run all the way from June to where we are right now, and so I'd be cautious here, and I'd be looking for a place to sell. A couple of days ago, I guess it was Thursday, we spiked up, but then we closed lower. I think that was an attempt at the recent high that could have been the failure that's going to lead to a lower dollar, which of course would be consistent to some of these higher commodity prices we're talking about, because sugar is very, very sugar, coffee. They're always when you see a crazy move in sugar without any sugar news, look to the U.S. dollar, and that'll pretty much tell you why what just happened.
On these metals, we went up to the mid-1500 to 1600 area, and we went to 19, I guess, on silver and change. Now we're at 18 and 15 and a little bit of low change. What's the seasonality on gold and silver as we go into the end of the year, Jake?
The seasonality is usually bottoming in August up into September and October. And then by the end of October, the play is usually over. The seasonal that we want to be looking at right now is copper.
Okay.
Copper tends to make its lows late in the year, making its highs in March, usually moving strongly higher around Christmas. And with that respect, there's one stock in particular. It's a little risky. Southern Peru Copper, SCCO, paying about a 5.5% dividend and very responsive to moves in copper. So there's also Rio Tinto, BHP, FCX, and the copper ETF, COPX.
What's the one you mentioned with the 5% dividend? Because obviously a lot of people like to get cash flow when they hold on to these metals because they don't pay interest. What was the symbol on that again?
Southern Peru Copper, SCCO.
And of course, at the end of the broadcast, people who want to get more information can contact you about that. Do you see anything happening in Norm technically?
I wanted to ask Jake about Freeport.
FCX.
Yeah, that's one that people usually go to for the copper. But yeah, I mean, I'm seeing this. We've been in a downward trend for all year long, as far as I can remember. This in the last year, we just attempted to make a run at it, but today's bar on a daily chart is encompassing on Friday's bar, and so all of a sudden the jury's out again.
Let me add one more thing to that, if I may.
Sure.
We have got the largest commercial buying in copper ever, and we know who the commercials are, primarily China. So if somebody says, hey, the Chinese are suffering, they're scaling back, the tariffs are hurting them, don't believe it. They're loading up on copper at these prices. Now, that doesn't mean that copper is going to go crazy tomorrow, but it's a long game for China, and that kind of aggressive buying by China is extremely bullish in the big picture.
And one last thing is on China, you know, they're getting real big over in Africa, and for all we know, they're going to be using these purchases for building over in Africa as the years unfold.
If I can just mention also...
They've got to rebuild Bermuda, but Bahamas first.
That's true.
That's true. The RSI on the copper, we're seeing a slight increase from the oversold level, even during the period where the market was still making lows. So this recent turnaround over the last couple of weeks, it was almost predictable by that. And, you know, we're in no place so we overbought right here. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I was in China last year. And what's interesting about that place is that, of course, they, you know, to make a decision, it's just six or seven guys that make all the decisions. And when they want to build a railroad, they just say, let's start tomorrow. Did you see the airport that they just built? They just built one of the biggest airports in the world. They put it up in like 2 years.
Yeah, fabulous airport.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it looks like 250 is a pretty good ground on it now. And if it can ever get above three, there'd be nothing stopping it as far as too much resistance.
Well, was it $1.50, Jake, where we used to say that if you melted your pennies, that copper couldn't go over $1.50?
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. The hell happened to that?
All right. Well, a lot of the people who are listening obviously are involved in stocks and bonds. So without further ado, let's switch over to the interest rates first. The 10-year note hit to a 190 after dropping to 140. We got a lot of Fed talk this week. What's the seasonal tell us about interest rates right now?
They're telling me that interest rates will go higher, not lower. Initially, they may go a little bit lower, yes. But after that, the trend will turn around and we'll head back to the upside on interest rates themselves, which means, of course, lower futures.
Do you see anything on the technicals, Norm, on like the 10-year?
We've broken. And, you know, one of my favorite patterns on the daily chart, we have a hesitation with a doji or a very small-bodied spinner followed by a very strong move down, you know, big red bar crossing, the 8-day or 9-day moving averages, exponential moving averages. That's a big signal to me. And ever since then, we've been coming down all the way from the 166 area to 158 or wherever it was today, 158.9. But yeah, but the other indicator, the anecdotal indicator, is that when you get a lot of calls about refinancing your house because of all the low rates, you can pretty much bet that, you know, they're going back up. So I don't know how much lower we can go. I can't believe, you know, that Europe is in the negative. I still haven't wrapped my head around what that means.
They've gone from $5 trillion negative yielding to $16 trillion in a year, and they're going to do a stimulus package. So just imagine that if they got the GDP going in Europe, all 16 trillion people trying to get out the door because they don't want to be in negative yielding stuff when growth has turned, that's going to be a very ugly situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of excessive acceleration from 5 trillion to 16 trillion, if it doesn't scare anybody, they're just obviously crazy. With regards to the stock market, okay, we have 30.27 as the high. We have about 29.40 as the breakout point. So it's a little bit of support, I think, right now. As we go into the end of the year, Jake, what are we looking for seasonally on the S&P 500?
Beginning third week of October, approximately, and I can give you an exact date next time we're on the air.
Okay.
I see the start of a move to the upside, which could probably be the biggest move of the year, possibly the biggest melt up in stocks that we've seen in a long time. Very bullish going into the last quarter.
And Norm, as far as your technicals and stuff, how do you see it unfolding?
Yeah, I really do see the same thing. I do think we're going to tend higher. I mean, this market's been relentless, and I just, in the long term of the quarter, at least till the end of the year, I don't see where we can fight that. It's interesting to hear Jake about the extent of what he expects, but that wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I mean, this quant guy over at JP Morgan, Kalanovic or something, his point was that participation levels are generally very low and cash levels are very, very high in money markets. And if you went and made new highs, short covering and some of these people throwing in the towel and saying, get me in, could obviously, you know, cause some, you know, algos to really go nuts on the upside.
Well, let's remember one thing. Money managers and hedge fund managers need to produce results. There are very few places they can go to get return.
That's right.
You certainly can't do it in bonds and notes. So it has to be done somewhere, real estate, stocks, and so forth, which will be an underlying incentive for them to buy stocks going into the last part of the year so they can show their investors some sort of return.
Blackstone just picked up $54 billion of commercial real estate, so I don't think they're just guessing. So
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're at the top of the hour here, and people that are listening, you guys have really got to take advantage of these two guys and their information, because again, two things that impress me is people with knowledge and humility, and both Jake and Norm have both. And so when you're out there looking for information in order to try to help you make your decisions, I think these guys can give you information that could be very, very helpful. So without further ado, I'd just like Jake and Norm just to again, reintroduce yourself and tell people how they can get a hold of you. If you have any special offers, this would be the time to let it go. And we'll start out with Jake.
Well, thank you. My website, jakebernstein.com. I have a new book. It's an ebook, 27 chapters, two chapters delivered every month for the next 10 months. It's called My Life in Trading, My 52 Years of Experience and What Lessons I've Learned. Great book. I'm enjoying writing it. It's at my website, jakebernstein.com.
Okay. Thanks a lot for being with us, Jake. Again, a lot of great information, and I can't wait to have you on again. Norm?
Well, two things. I didn't want people to ignore the Bitcoin. Now that these charts are starting to have a little meat to them, the pattern that I see in the daily Bitcoin chart may be pointing to a pretty dramatic move higher from its kind of sagging doldrums lately. If you're looking to get into the crazy world of Bitcoin, GBTC, the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, is a way to do it for stock traders, where you can trade it just like you trade a stock. It's right around $12 a share now, $12.40. But I think if you look at the chart, you'll see a pennant on the daily chart that's pretty impressive. If it breaks higher, you got to wait for the breakout. I think we can check the old highs. As far as an offer, I've been doing this secretly for my better customers for a couple of years, where my wife and I, we call it two-on-one coaching. My wife is a very well-known subconscious trainer, and I have the knowledge of the market. We both do, really. And we're just about to start next month a high-end coaching program. So if you're interested in a high-end coaching program, you haven't been able to kind of get your head together with everything that you've tried, send me an email, nhallett, N-H-A-L-L-E-T-T, nhallett at thedisciplinedtrader.com. And let me know you're interested, and I'll send you some information on it. So, because we can take a few people.
Great. Okay, that sounds great, Norm. Again, I'd like to thank Jake Bernstein of trade-futures.com and Norm Hallett of thedisciplinedtrader.com for being with us here today. I'm Jim Kinney. If you have any questions on what I'm following, what I see, simply shoot me an email.
It's an option. You should tell us what you see.
Well, I gave you a little bit of insight on some of the things I saw, but this was your show, you know?
You're getting good at this, Jim. I mean,
Jake, you know, if Barbara Streisand's singing, you know, I'm not going to run up and take the mic from her. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry.
At any rate, I like to be the guy who's acting dumb on the other end of the phone.
You're doing great.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And again, I'm trying to bring out the fact that you guys have the knowledge, you have the humility, and this is the kind of people that you want to get some information from. And then when you make your own decisions, you know, you have a lot of ingredients into your soup. So I'm going to toss it back over to David. But again, anyone who'd like to contact me and ask me questions on what I'm up to, optionprofessor@gmail.com. David, back to you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get the instant updates on future episodes. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows there. Be sure to join us tomorrow for the 94th episode of Analyze Your Trade. Felix Frey will be back for that one, and Jim will be moderating again. That'll be at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, and you can go to timingresearch.com/live to get live access to all the shows. And I just want to thank my guests again for today, Jake Bernstein of trade-futures.com and also jakebernstein.com, as he mentioned, Norman Hallett of thedisciplinedtrader.com, and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks David, for organizing this great event.